Hello, here we are at Sydney Town Hall, and as part of the Generation Next Day on mental health and wellbeing, and I'm with Jill Hickson with MADX, and we're all talking really about violent extremism and choosing not to hate. And I think given that we have in the world a number of sad incidents where violent extremism has occurred, we're now in a position where we really know what contributes to that. And so I'd love your comments respectively on that. It's time, I think, to pull what we know together to form meaningful action. Mm. Perhaps, Jill, would you like to comment first?
Yeah, I think it's very interesting, even when we hear Matt's story, that there are, whilst it's dangerous to always generalise, there are key points that we see time and time again in the contributing things that influence someone's decision and indeed choice to go into a pathway where they feel valued, appreciated, acknowledged, and what do all those things perhaps add up to is power. And I guess my frustration, having worked in this field for over 10 years, is that we're still actually discussing the root causes of violent extremism rather than accepting that there are so many pillars that we see similarities in both alt-right, in both faith-based, any extremist ideologies that have a violent propensity. We can very, very much sort of understand why that has happened. For me, it's what are we then doing as a society to address that? And I think most of my work is with quite young people in trying to get to that point before the influence becomes too great. So for me, prevention starts very early on in the piece when we've identified someone who is starting to show some of those pillars of familiarity that we feel has a tendency that could go into violent extremism.
So the life trajectories of an outsider. And MADX, you've also been working in this field, helping people to lessen their tendency towards violent extremism. Do you notice commonalities in your work?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm right with what you're saying about, especially around the power. You know, I see, I guess, three main things in violent extremism, which is like a disattachment from parents, trauma, or an identity issue. And I think there's like so much, like you're saying, out there already, there's so much information. Why it's not all being put together, so that we can work on those kids at that age. And also like, even just simple things like coping skills and things like that. You know, if we could teach these kids these things when they're young, then we wouldn't even have these problems develop later in life.
So from all of my research on resilience and all of the research on trauma, and I think a large proportion of choosing to hate comes from wounding and trauma, and I'd love your comments on that as well, we know that it's a sense of belonging that people have that's the real foundation stone of recovery and resilience. So what can we do in our world to create a more powerful sense of you belong here?
I think we are more increasingly, I believe, bombarded with a validation of a sense of hate speech. And it gets dressed up as all sorts of wonderful things like, well, it's my right and it's free speech. And I would question that to say, what is actually free speech? Because if it's something that's aimed at deliberately being divisive, then to me, that has to be a terminology for hate speech. And if people feel segregated, then we've got a fantastic sort of almost perfect storm of almost pushing people into extreme areas and to where they feel they do belong if they don't belong to an idea of us as a society.
So it seems to me that political parties, rather than promising their voters a better future, try to ride into power at somebody's expense. And so they find minorities to blame for the lack of prosperity of people. And so they're active contributors into hate speech, ultimately.
And fear works. Yeah, we know this historically. Yeah, whipping up a sense of fear is a fantastic controlling measure, because once you get people to fear, then you present yourself as the solution and or the thing that will help alleviate whatever they're fearing. So it's a very age-old tactic that sadly we see still played out to this day globally.
Matt, do you think that we need to let our politicians know that we're actually better than this, that we actually are a community, we are a society, not just an economy, and we don't really stand for scapegoats too much?
Yeah, I think that's something that like a lot of people seem to forget. You know, like government, sure, like they're in charge of the authority and stuff like that, but it's actually the community that can come together and actually put the pressure on the government to stop what they're doing. You know, like really the community is the authority. And I think, you know, with the hate speech and things like that and belonging, you know, we need to realise that all these people that are falling through the gaps, it's actually the community that can come together with all the resources that we have. We don't actually need to wait for government, and we don't need the government to push the fear to fix those issues.
And opinion is very accessible. Yeah, opinion counts now. People are making decisions based on opinion rather than fact. And again, it's how do we search for the facts and feel that we're able to find an answer that wades through opinion.
In my work in communities, I often find it's young people who are more open-minded and tolerant than their parents and certainly their grandparents about some of these issues. And so, to my mind, it's in empowering the young people to be leaders in this area. If we're going to lead ourselves on to a better world, we need to empower those young people. I'd love your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think that's great, you know, and it's definitely true. You know, like we see now, even with, you know, the climate change sort of protests and stuff like that, the kids are getting out there and raising the issue. But I think, you know, it kind of reminds me almost like that shooting in Florida. You know, where the kids came out and they were like, oh, you know, we need to stop guns and stuff. But there was also the suggestion of, like, if those kids had come together, they could have stopped the bullying of that guy and probably even stopped that. So instead of always just looking at the end goal, we also need to look at that prevention side of it.
Well, that's right. We know that the course and the trajectory of violent extremism has its beginnings in that sense of a small child who feels vulnerable either at home or at school, and identifies him or herself as an outsider in some form.
Yeah. I mean, the security forces are obviously doing an awesome job at the, you know, the end of the point, you know, if they have to stop an attack. But, like, there's all these many years before when that person's been radicalised and conditioned to get to there that we could help out with them.
And I think it's a very different sort of crime. For a long time, I was trying to get the terminology changed so that terrorists weren't labelled as that, so that society felt that actually this isn't something we will never be able to tackle. It's crime, but just crime with a very different type of network and a very powerful network. And when I'm talking to young people who are of ideological persuasion, quite often I spend time just trying to get them to understand that they're not actually fighting for a cause which is appealing to their passionate side. They're actually just part of a cog in a very big business wheel that's making a lot of money. And how does that make them feel? That actually, you know, let's look at the facts, let's lay all the facts bare, and then we can start to see that this is really just a very sophisticated criminal network that makes money. And you're really nothing more than a criminal. And that hurts to the core of their sense of fighting for something that is true and that is making a difference.
And I find that young people are smart analysts about these issues.
Yes. Yep. Yep. Very much so.
Yeah. You know, like what you're saying there, it just reminds me, like, you never saw the leader going out and doing any of the attacks. You know, like they always send out the members, you know.
The CEO.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. So just one final question. If in an ideal world you had all the resources at your fingertips to do the the sort of work that you are really wanting to do and have the impact you would really love to have, what would be needed to, or what would you have that you don't have now as a capacity, as a way of furthering the work that you do?
Well, that's so hard, because I think that there are so many things that influence from the outside, in terms of media, in terms of government rhetoric. So for me, it would be, how could we have a consensus to say we will only print and deal with the fact, and we're only going to talk facts from now on. There won't be any creative license or colouring or persuasion of a left or a right leaning. It is just the bare facts is what it is.
I might put my thoughts in, which is that it would be about having a very powerful process of building communities around Australia, that communities, particularly in rural areas, are dissolving. And I think I can feel aggrieved, and it's very easy to feel like you've got a chip on your shoulder when you're being overlooked. And so having particularly rural Australia feel that it has a process of supporting, building that community, and then ultimately doing that in the capital cities as well. Mm. What would yours be?
Well, I think, and I don't mean to disrespect anyone, but I think, like, you know, the Indigenous Australians are really left out of this picture.
Yep.
And if anyone knows, you know, the understanding of what it's like to be, like, isolated and, you know, pushed out of belonging to a majority group and stuff like that, it's them.
Mm. Absolutely.
Mm. I think we need to do, yeah, more, you know, with the Indigenous Australians and
Absolutely.
Learn from them.
Yep.
So while we've got outsiders, we can't fully heal.
No. And definitely when it's like the first Australians, we're not even listening to them.
So Australia, last time I checked, is actually a commonwealth. And that idea of commonwealth seems almost an outmoded idea now, but it seems to me what you're saying is that's exactly what we need, is to become, again, a commonwealth, to look at the prosperity of all people.
And just to follow on from that, I mean, if we have 65,000 years of knowing how to do community, knowing how to do peace, knowing how to negotiate the crossing of land, then we should be using that wealth of knowledge far more to make Australia actually leading in a global conversation of how do we address violent extremism and how do we learn from those far wiser who have been doing this a very long time.
Definitely. I think we all agree on that. So thank you so much for the work that you do. Thank you for sharing some thoughts about some of the things that we do. And we certainly take on those ideas on board. And I guess it's also about realising that all of us in our own way, whether we're aware of it or not, are activists about this area. As the question is whether we're positive or negative.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.